This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Jim Popp and Jeremy Fowler in the 6 o'clock hour. Former Mariners GM doing some TV work in Pittsburgh now. Jack Zarenchik later on this hour to talk baseball. Hour number 2 of Overdrive begins. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller. And now's the time, Gord, where I'm going to put my feet up, probably turn off my mic.
Yeah.
And just let you give us the 411 on Thorbjørn Olesen.
Yeah. So yeah,
I'm very familiar with his career.
I'm one of the leading authorities on Thorbjørn Olesen.
I just call him Thor at this point.
Thor, I think it's a hell of a nickname for the guy. His nickname would be Thor. I can honestly tell you, looking at the leaderboard for the PGA Championship, Thorbjørn Olesen, Grayson Murray, Gary Woodland.
Kepka's in there.
I know Kepka. Chris Stroud, Tony Finau, Jim Herman, Patrick Reed. I can honestly say I don't think I could pick them out of a lineup.
See, Rory's in there too at 2 under.
Rory's at 2 under. Paul Casey's in there. I know what he looks like. Ricky Fowler's at 2 under. Now I watched today. Interesting. I was watching the feature group selection. So you just watched. It was Kepka,
Spieth, right?
Kepka, Spieth, and Garcia. You saw every shot they hit. So it's kind of like following them around the golf course. So here's the thing when you go to a tournament is you got to decide, am I staying at one hole and watching everyone come through, or am I walking around trying to watch various groups?
Or do I pick a guy?
Pick a guy and just follow. Which is hard to do because you're going to get bottlenecked at the more popular holes.
Right.
So invariably what happens is if you stay at one hole, you keep hearing these roars at other holes. But if you pick a good spot, you can see, you know, like at Augusta, if you sit in the grandstand behind the 12th hole, you can see the approach shots and putts on 11, obviously the tee shots and putts on 12, then you can see the tee shots on 13, and with binoculars, if you're high enough up, you can see them play out at 13.
Wow. So you've sat there before?
I've not sat in that grandstand.
All right, because you've got it down to the fine detail with the binocs and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then, but at the British Open, I sat in the grandstand at the Road Hole in 2000 on the Friday afternoon. So Mike Weir played, I think, in the morning. And so I was done. So I sat in the Road Hole grandstand for the entire afternoon and just watched everyone play through. Saw one birdie all day.
Really?
Saw one birdie all day. Mark Calcavecchia.
What were the conditions?
Just windy.
Yeah.
Raining. Nasty.
Ugly.
Yeah. And the Road Hole is a beast anyway.
So we got Spieth at one over. Right now.
He's fine.
So he's 5 strokes back of your buddy Thor.
Yeah, big Thor.
Which is not a big deal on a Thursday. Lots of weekend to play here.
Don't go out and shoot 74 today. That's the big thing, right?
Well, and certainly don't go out and shoot 74 tomorrow. You know, don't put yourself at risk of missing the cut or whatever the case may be. Do you think we appreciate Spieth?
No.
The way...
I don't
maybe
think
we should, or maybe we shouldn't. I come from the Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson era,
right.
And I was a Tiger guy. I invested energy in rooting for a player and energy in rooting against a player to the point where even when Phil's kicking, I know he's 47, 48 years old now, it's fun to watch the old man do good things. I can't bring myself to root for Phil.
So I was at the Open Championship in 2000 when Tiger had just won the U.S. Open by 15 and then demolished the field at St. Andrews. It was incredible. It was incredible. He was so much better than everyone else. And I guess because, you know, Steph Curry seems to be, so good and seems to be a level above, but wasn't the MVP this year.
Well, yeah, and he also plays in a league with LeBron James.
Right.
You know,
but
Steph's considered one of the best shooters of all time.
So he really stands out. Sidney Crosby stands out. Tom Brady stands out. It's so hard to do that now. Like, I don't know if people realize how hard it is to dominate a sport now. Harder than it's ever been. And I think Federer's Wimbledon win and Aussie Open win is unbelievable this year. I think that we have to recalibrate what we think is dominant, And I think Jordan Spieth falls into this category of dominating at a time when it's harder than ever to do it.
And if it happened, Gord, I'm sure we would be all over it and slamming a guy. But you know what we need? And I say this honestly. The diehard golf fans will always be there.
Yeah.
The rest of us need a, for lack of a better way to put it on terrestrial radio, a bleep hole. We need somebody who moves us emotionally either to his side or absolutely dead set against him. One way or the other, we're cheering for that guy or we're rooting against him.
So what we forget is, you know, Jack Nicklaus won 18 majors, professional majors. He also won the U.S. Amateur twice, but 18 professional majors. He finished second in 15 others.
And he was not a beloved guy coming up, right? Because Arnie was
people
so
loved
but that's
loved
the thing. See, Arnold Palmer moved that needle. Everybody loved him.
What we need is two guys that don't get along.
The way that Tiger and Phil had
that sort
honest
of,
friction.
That friction between them. They just weren't... They were just different guys.
Right.
But the problem is now, like, Jordan Spieth goes on vacation with Ricky Fowler... Right, that they're all buddies. Maybe Dustin Johnson's the guy. He's not a bad guy. He's just, but maybe he's that guy, right? Maybe Dustin Johnson says, "I want to rip Jordan Spieth."
But there's nothing about Dustin Johnson that's unlikable. You almost want to root for him as a guy who has overcome, some of the challenges that he's faced. But even that, he's just kind of another. I mean, he can. Hammer a golf ball. There's no question. But as you said an hour ago when we started the program, there's not a lot that differentiates the heavy hitters anymore because a lot of people can hit a ball 350.
Like I do think that men's tennis has had this extraordinary run with Djokovic and Nadal and Federer and Murray. Not in that order, but with that incredible group. Djokovic was unlikable at the start. The players didn't like him. He tanked a lot. He quit on sets a lot. But those guys had each other to play off. What we need in golf is for Spieth and McIlroy and Johnson to all be on the leaderboard repeatedly.
What we needed was Sergio to do what he's done this year, right. six years ago.
You're right. No, you're exactly right. So we need rivalry. And it's not that one guy has to be a bad guy. It's got to be that you're a Spieth guy and I'm a DJ guy. And someone else is a Ricky Fowler or Rory McIlroy guy. McIlroy hasn't been able to seemingly get the momentum going, but I just think it's so hard to dominate in that sport. To beat 154 people every week.
And it's interesting, you talk to a guy like Mark Zucchino, who's all over this stuff, and he co-host of Golf Talk Canada on TSN, right here on TSN 1050. Bob Weeks will tell you the same thing. Guy like McIlroy, and... I mean, we don't need them to tell us. We can just look. Dude is jacked.
Yeah. Well, they all are. The problem is they all are.
And so...
They're all doing yoga for 2 hours a day.
Right, but to me...
They used to finish their round and go pound beer for 2 hours.
Yeah, but they're doing yoga 2 hours every day in order to maintain flexibility because they're all trying to look like Hulk Hogan. I'm convinced that part of this, too, is, you know, you can fall in love with how you look in a golf shirt. You know...
I'm wearing one right now. I'm not in love with it.
Sun's out, guns out. Boom, I'm on TV. I'm coming out through that shirt. A lot of these guys are carrying the type of muscular body weight, Gord, that I don't think is necessarily conducive
to succeeding in
that game.
The key to golf is flexibility.
That's my point.
Fred Couples, a long hitter, but Dustin Johnson is ridiculously flexible. Like, I don't know how his spine doesn't explode every time he hits his driver. Like when you slow it down and look how he contorts himself when he hits it, I just think it, for whatever reason, the technology is part of it too, but it's just so hard to be better than everyone else now, and yet we have a select few athletes who seemingly are.
Why now, as compared to 15 years ago, or was Tiger just once in that lifetime guy?
So he was way ahead of the curve in terms of fitness, flexibility. The equipment hadn't caught up, so he was. I mean, when watch Tiger win his first Masters, he's using a steel shafted driver, right? So everyone was using steel back then. Now, you know, 6 years later, graphite comes along, composite shafts. Everyone's got a tailor. You know, brought me a shaft, quote unquote, tailor made for them, a low kick point, high kick point, whatever you want, right? So now you go from a guy who's 20 yards longer than everyone to a point where the top 30 drivers are all within like 5 yards of each other. So it's just harder to dominate that way. And so I guess the mental aspect of it is so important. I mean, Tom Brady is mentally tougher than probably any player in the NFL. You know, Crosby is really mentally tough and wants to be great every night and doesn't seem to crack under the pressure. So I just think that we have to recalibrate what we consider dominant. I think Jordan Spieth is dominating golf.
Well, there's only one guy who's accomplished what he's accomplished by his age.
So to answer your question,
Jack.
I don't think we appreciate him enough. I don't think we... Now, he does need a rival, right? Jack had Arnie at the first part of his career. Then he had Trevino, right? Johnny Miller. He had a host of guys that challenged him all the time. And those guys were regular... Like, Johnny Miller was top 10 every week, right? Those guys were always in contention. But it was easier to be in contention all the time then.
Tiger had Mickelson. He was supposed to have had Garcia.
Yeah.
Sergio didn't hold up his end of the bargain that time.
And there were others, you know, Justin Leonard, you know, who's but he just wasn't long enough. And one of the problems was they made the courses so long to try to Tiger-proof them that they eliminated half the field. They took half the field out of golf. Like, you've got the first hole at Quail Hollow is a 520-yard par 4. Well, how many guys, a third of the field is life and death to get there in two.
I'm trying to think of how that would go for me.
Not just to get there in two, but I mean to accurately get there in two.
If I played that hole perfectly, 520 yards, par 4, if I played it perfectly.
Driver, 3-wood, 7-iron.
No, I'm thinking 5 or 6 at best. I'm double bogeying that. To begin with,
you're hoping you drop your 7-iron or 5-iron within, you know, 10 feet and maybe make the putt.
Yeah, which with
but no, but I mean, so when they Tiger-proofed the courses, they took what you wanted to do was shorten the courses and make them more penal, right? Make so if you're a yard off the fairway, make it tougher. That's how you bring the rest of the field into play. But they went the other way,
right? Like grow the fescue up to the waist.
Right.
Like
so if you knock
it, almost happened in Wisconsin last month.
Yeah, if you knock it off the fairway, you pay a price. But what they've done here is they've removed like 2,000 trees from this course. They want grippers and rippers.
Mm-hmm.
They want big bombers to flail away, and that's
well. They love the long ball in baseball.
Yeah,
they love the long ball in golf.
Yeah,
and people pay to see. They don't see the chips are nice like here and there. The big putts.
So does Aaron Judge striking out a lot bother you? Like it's ridiculous how many times he struck out this year.
I'd have to look.
He had 150.
High rate, probably, and he's not had a very good second half so far as the league's adjusted to him.
But Scott, even then, like even in the first half, he was striking out a ton.
Right. But you see, the thing with a guy like Aaron Judge is it isn't just all the home runs he's hit, Gord. It's the fact that he's putting them into the second deck opposite field at Rogers Center. He was doing that back in early June when the
And he hit one off the Jumbotron in batting practice.
Yes, he
and
did.
And then turned on that one on Monday night, hit the foul ball, like halfway up the 500 level.
Right.
So I just, let me find out how many strikeouts he's got here. One second.
But yeah. this is where Aaron
Judge has struck out 147 times this year.
It used to be, in baseball, oh my God, Adam Dunn is going to strike out 200 times this year. And that was almost like a mark on the guy.
Right.
He might hit 40, 45 home runs, but 200 strikeouts. Guys don't care now.
No, they don't care.
180, 190, 200, 220, whatever.
Yep.
As long as my
and
power numbers are there.
Right. And so in golf, what you have now is guys who just powerize through the course. Right. They just hit their driver as far as they can, then they get in the rough, and they just muscle it out of there, and they muscle it around. So you can complain all you want about it. I mean, you can argue the Steph Curry thing that you know the 3-point shot has completely taken over the NBA. When the Lakers won the 3-point shot was legalized, the Lakers won the title in 83. I think they tried 15 threes all year. Seriously.
Yeah, you get 15 threes in
a quarter,
first quarter.
Right, so the 3-ball is everything in the NBA.
Right.
Right. And
no question.
So
which begs, and that creates this debate, because all we do here, Steph's a hell of a shooter. There are better players than Steph Curry, but Steph is inarguably the best shooter in the game right now. Well, maybe being the best shooter makes you
okay.
And so I'm not throwing LeBron or anybody else aside, but for this day and age, the type of player required, Steph's as important to his team as anybody else.
So if you
on any other team.
If you're the Toronto Raptors, you can have any player in the NBA. You probably take
LeBron. I'd take LeBron.
You take LeBron. Who's next? Curry.
Yeah.
He's almost indefensible.
Right, because he can haul it from
everywhere,
halfway between the three-point line
from the bus. He starts shooting when he gets off the bus and doesn't start to stop and gets back on it. Like yeah. So I mean, is that bad for sport? I like home runs, but if you're telling me that it's okay to strike out 150 times at this point in the year, no, it's not.
Well, it's the difference between the old two-strike approach and the new two-strike approach.
Right, which is
we used to shorten your swing. There'd be guys who choke up on the bat gourd, and they just look to put the ball in play, right? Or foul.
So
now it's grip it and rip it, long so just, swings with two strikes.
So just think for a minute, though. Let's say the Yankees look like they're going to make the postseason.
They're in a good position to do so.
Let's say they make the postseason. Judge can't strike out like this in the postseason.
But this is the risky run. Does the guy get red hot? Does he adjust to the adjustments that have been made to him in the second half of the season? And is he cranking them? Or is he blue cold? I mean, it really just depends on type of week or 2 week period, 3 week period they're having.
I guess what I'm saying is, though, if you're striking out this much, you gotta adjust. Like to help your, I mean, I remember Whitey Herzog saying years ago, complaining about, you know, because home runs in the 80s, in the late 80s were getting, you know, big. And I was down at spring training and he was saying, like, you know, shortstops who were hitting like 220 were shaving their bat handles down for more power. And what they were doing was breaking their bats and grounding into double plays. And it was driving them crazy because everyone wanted to hit home runs. And I guess what I'm saying is Aaron Judge is great to watch. But if you're saying to me he's the next big thing, he's got to be under 100 strikeouts.
Yeah, well, it's funny even.
Or maybe he doesn't.
But here's,
maybe that's how it's changed. Maybe he doesn't.
The best player in baseball. Who's the best player in baseball?
Well,
easy. It's easy for me.
Okay.
Mike Trout.
Okay.
Hands down.
Well, Clayton Kershaw, but.
Okay, he's a pitcher. Yep. Yeah, so the best pitcher in baseball.
Well, he wears a uniform, too.
Yeah, no, he does. You're right. He's out there every fifth day. But the best player in baseball is Mike Trout, and
fair enough.
He will go north of 100 every year. He'll get into that 140, 150 range. Yet he's still got 25, 30, 35 home runs. He's got the on-base percentage north of 400.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the slugging percentage in that 600 range, around 1,000 OPS. And I just don't think guys look at it this way. You got 600 plate appearances, arguably, in a season. Sometimes you've got more if you're playing every day. 200 of those are outs. 200 of those are successful. And it's what you do with the other 200. I don't think these guys mind if a sizable percentage of the outs they make are of the three strikes, swing and a miss, come out of your shoes variety. I just don't think they care.
The most Joe DiMaggio ever struck out in a single season was his rookie year. He struck out 39 times. In his 13 years in the major leagues, he struck out 369 times total.
But there's also pitching.
Oh, hey,
that factors in here, right?
It's just amazing to think about it.
But you,
Babe Ruth struck out a lot.
Yes, but you know, like a guy like DiMaggio, and this goes back to Ruth too, and his approach was different than DiMaggio's, but they weren't facing a guy throwing 100 miles an hour in the seventh.
And relievers, yeah.
You know, it was a different,
no,
a different time.
But I guess what I'm asking is, like, for the longest time in tennis, right, if you had only a big serve, it wasn't enough. You know, Goran Ivanišević used to get the quarters at Wimbledon every year. It was the only time he got to the quarters in a tennis tournament all year long. Being the biggest hitter in golf wasn't necessarily... You still had to be able to play the game.
But yes.
You still had to be able to play.
But here's the thing, Gord. You know this. In baseball, with all the defensive shifts, right? Because,
yeah.
Because the data will tell you, all right, this guy, he's a left-handed hitter, he's dead pull, so if he puts the ball on the ground, 99.9% of the time he's pulling it to the first base side. So you stack your first baseman, you throw your third baseman or shortstop in right field, your second baseman, and you play him deep. You've got that side covered. So the adjustment the hitters have made to that adjustment that defenders have made is to say, all right, use the Josh Donaldson quote, ground balls are death. We're looking at launch angle now. There's an exit velocity component, but specifically we're looking at launch angle. We are looking to hit line drives, and we are looking to hit balls in the air. Who cares if we come out of our shoes? Colby Rasmus would play here with the Blue Jays, and he would...
Right, from
his heels. Drove, yes, but it drove him insane. He would count the base hits from start to finish in a year that he felt he was robbed of because he'd pound the ball into the shift. Right? So he's saying to himself, if I'm being robbed of 25 or 30 hits each year because the first base, second base hole is being covered by the shortstop or the third baseman in midway right field and I'm pounding it into the turf and they're throwing me out, what's the difference between hauling ass and trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark and striking out instead and beating the ball into the ground, and that going for an out, too. So it's the cat and mouse game.
And you know who did that first, who refused to adjust? Ted Williams.
Right, and Lou Boudreau, the manager of what, Cleveland?
Yeah, the Williams
created
shift.
The shift, yeah.
The Williams shift, and Ted Williams would not adjust. He would not adjust. He just kept pounding into the shift, throwing his bat down in disgust, and refusing to adjust.
Right.
He just would not. A hard-headed dude. But I guess what I'm asking is, are we in a time in a lot of sports when all we talk about is power?
That's a good point.
Is that all we're talking? Now, you know, in basketball, you know, Steph Curry's not obviously not powerful, but we're talking about the long shot, the three ball.
Okay, so let me flip that. Hockey, to me, unless you consider this power, where the emphasis is on speed and skill, right?
It's becoming that for sure. It went to for a while there. Chara and Weber with the point shots,
which is power.
Which is I mean,
obvious.
So people didn't care if Zdeno Chara was getting beaten and, you know, maybe wasn't as good defensively as he could be. He was shooting the puck 108 miles an hour, and
in his own end, he had the 10-foot wingspan.
But he got beat up the ice a lot, and Weber the same way with that hard low point shot. And the power became part of it. There is an element, I agree with you, that the NHL has gone away from, you know, the simple size component. You know, where you had to be big to be dominant. And I think it's a better game for it. And I guess what I'm saying is, and maybe I'm old school about it, I've watched the Yankees here this week. You know, Aaron Judge is fun, but watching guys strike out a lot isn't really...
Yeah, and he's been terrible since the All-Star break because teams are...
But Mark McGwire was like that. In his prime, Mark McGwire would have like 160 hits in a year and 70 of them were home runs.
It's what made Barry Bonds so special.
Right. No, he was. Hey, listen.
Didn't strike out a lot.
But steroids didn't make Barry Bonds a better hitter. They made him a better power hitter. Barry Bonds is a great baseball player.
He's a Hall of Famer before he took steroids.
Lousy human. Lousy human, and I've been on the receiving end of his lousy humanity in Montreal one day. But he was a great baseball player. So, I mean, is Aaron Judge a great baseball player?
He's an exciting ball player. He's a rookie, so I think it's too early to make.
I'm not too early to judge. Oh wow,
him.
But I'm asking the question. I'm not making a comment. I'm just asking the question. Can you strike out that much?
If you hit those home runs that far, I think that you can. And if you play in the pinstripes like he does, you can market that. And I think that they will attempt to make or to take full advantage of it. The other thing is he's built like a defensive end.
Yeah.
And this guy's 6'8", 270. I mean, it's absurd. There are very few baseball players
who've
ever played that big, Gord.
Remember when the biggest Yankee was their first base coach, Frank Howard? Like he was like 60 years old and towered over the.
Right.
I remember seeing him standing beside Don Mattingly one day. Like, which one's the player? Which one's the first base coach?
I go through some of my old baseball cards or sticker books from the 80s, and these picks would often be taken at spring training, right? And
then
turned into sticker book stuff or baseball cards. Like these were just regular dudes. The one that stands out in my mind, Ernie Witt, just looked like he could have rolled off of. He could have rolled out of an accounting firm. He could have rolled out of a delivery truck. Just looked like a guy.
But I got to tell you, like Bryce Harper to me is a far better player at that young age than Judge was. He doesn't hit the 500-foot home runs. He doesn't. But Bryce Harper's a more complete player.
Yep. So is Mike Trout.
Right.
No question. And those to me are the two best players in baseball.
Well, Clayton Kershaw.
Yes, pitchers as well. Like, bringing them all in, to me, I've said this, Gord, I'm repeating myself, but it's too bad that Kershaw and Trout meet in Interleague on the West Coast and we are almost never up to see it, because that is Sandy Koufax versus Mickey Mantle in 2017.
Yeah, for sure.
They are. Both of those guys are that good. And if you go to Clayton Kershaw's baseball reference page, the bold italicized statistics which signify him as a league leader are just dotted.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Dotted all over his page. All right, we'll come back on the other side. A former Seattle Mariners GM, now working for Root Sports in Pittsburgh, Jack Zarenchuk will join us. Could Marco Estrada be on the move? He starts tonight for the Blue Jays. If he throws well, it would be a third consecutive good start after a two-month period, really, that was absolutely horrifying. Now, they'd have to get him through waivers and yada, yada, yada. Maybe they already have. But could Marco Estrada have some trade value for this Blue Jays team? We'll ask Jack that and so much more next. Stay with us. Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Gord Miller. You're listening to TSN 1050. You're streaming us on the TSN Go app.
Even flow then, huh? Reminds you of your high school days, or is it too early?
This reminds me a little bit, but it reminds me of my middle school days more. E.J. James, Oakville, Ontario, Canada. This came out in what, 90? Maybe 90 or 91?
I was going to say 92, but close enough.
I have to look. Well, I can, Gord, if you wouldn't
mind. I was 27.
If you wouldn't mind just talking for 30 seconds, since I can't type.
You can't type and talk? Really?
Yeah.
I was thinking about, you know, being a heavy hitter in sport.
91.
91.
Bang.
But I was thinking about, like, in golf, is it an advantage anymore to be the longest driver? Right? So let's look at driving distance on the PGA Tour. Who are the longest drivers on the tour? And strangely enough, it's not guys that dominate. It's not the guys that dominate on the leaderboard every week.
Well, like names that jump out to me are DJ
Johnson's long,
Brooks Koepka, Bubba Watson.
Johnson is the longest hitter, but Brandon Hagee is second.
Okay,
Luke List is third. Ryan Bram is fourth. Andrew Loop is fifth.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So
you're falling out of my wheelhouse with those names.
No. So, yeah. But I mean, those are people that casual golf fans wouldn't really know.
Right.
I remember.
Where's Bubba Watson on that list?
He's actually still on the list. He's Bubba Watson is 11th.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Koepka's 6th. Right. So I mean, Jordan Spieth. Where is he here? Oh, I must have missed him.
He'd be down a little bit, wouldn't he? More of a...
Yeah, but
he's a finesse guy.
He should be in the top 30, shouldn't he?
You'd think, but...
Still going. I'm in the 60s. No, he's got to be higher in the 60s.
Well, maybe not.
No, he's 80th.
There you go.
He's 80th in driving distance on the PGA Tour.
But short game is everything, right? Short game is the differentiator.
It is now because
if everybody can hit it.
So Tiger would be the anomaly. So Arnold, Jack, and Tiger were measurably longer. So they had a huge advantage. Now it doesn't appear you do. By the way, Dustin Johnson averages 314 yards a drive.
Not bad.
Outrageous.
It's that hole at Glen Abbey that has the wicked dog leg, right? And now?
Five.
And now the guys just...
They fly it.
Hit it over the trees.
Yeah.
You know, we're not stopping short and then...
But the point is, if you made the rough longer, right? So if you drove it through the fairway and it was going to penalize you, guaranteed a stroke, they'd think about it.
But imagine, like, Gord, last month, I mean, all the talk leading into the U.S. Open was all about the fescue.
I think the USGA went too far the other way. I think the USGA went too far.
They started trimming it along.
Yeah.
But that's what you're talking about, though.
They took the roars out of golf. They tricked up the greens so bad at the U.S. Open for so long, right, to try to make them super, super fast, that they turned them into carnival rides. Like, if you hit a good shot, you should still be able to make birdie.
Yep.
I don't want them to go. I mean, they went like 500-yard par fours with super fast greens and high rough. That's no fun to watch. I don't tune into a golf tournament to watch guys slap it around like I do. I want to see good shots get rewarded. I want to see players have to make decisions. You know, do you go for it or not? Make a good shot. But for a long time, I mean, they wrecked Wingfoot the one year, just destroyed it. I mean, they basically killed the greens. The Open Championship is always a great test of golf. And they're able to do that without having to have these monster holes. But I wonder about that. Like, I wonder if we're so focused on power in sport now, if we're missing playing the game.
We come back. Because often these things...
Now, Roger Federer is a great example of a guy who... He's got a great serve. It's not the hardest serve, but it's incredibly accurate. He can serve to any point on either court. Flat spin, top spin, kick serve. He has every serve.
We were talking about it in the break, though, too. I mean, return game is as
so. Raonic was hurt. Milos Raonic was hurt this week. Has a bad wrist, but the fact is, if Raonic is going to break through and be a top five player consistently, his return game's got to be better. I think he's fifth or fourth on the ATP tour in service games won. He wins like 90% of his service games. The problem is, in terms of his return game, he's 65th. The top players on tour, Murray, Djokovic, Nadal, are great returners of serve. They win roughly 30% of their return games. Raonic wins like 17% of his.
I'd be interested.
So that's the problem, right? If you break him once.
I'd be interested, not having looked it up, in seeing, and I'm sure the data is out there, percentage of sets won in which you've been broken.
Right.
If you've been broken once, you've been broken twice, you keep... Yeah. You get punched, you counterpunch.
Right. So in a case like... So a guy like Federer... Our better example is Murray, because Andy Murray's got a terrific... So you break Andy Murray, he's fine, because he's got a 1-in-3 chance of breaking you.
Mm-hmm. Bounce back.
Yeah.
All right, we'll flip gears here. The Pirates game is over and done with, and so is the broadcast there. And so a good friend of ours joins us on the program right now. We'll get into some baseball chatter. Jack Sorenchik is the former general manager of the Seattle Mariners, now working on TV in Pittsburgh, and he's with us. He joins us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Jack, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Scott. Gord, how are you guys doing today in Toronto?
We're doing excellent.
So how was the Pirates game?
They won. It was 7-5, and Garrett Cole pitched very effectively today. So they put themselves within three games of first place, and it's been an interesting year for them. So up and down, injuries here or there, and all kind of setbacks. But, you know, here it is. You know, what is it, August 10th, and you find yourself three games out. That's pretty good position considering what they've been through.
Baseball's a strange game, Jack. It was 2 years ago that the Cardinals won the NL Central with, I think, 101 wins, and then it was the Pirates and Cubs in the wild card game with 98 and 97, respectively. Now, that division is, I mean, the Pirates are right in it because everything is congested. It's a relatively mediocre division, and meanwhile, out in the NL West, you've got three teams that should hit north of 90 victories if all things stay the same. What's gone on in the NL Central?
That's interesting. Well, you know, it's funny. One of the guys asked me today, he talked about the NL Central, and he said, you know, who do you think that has done a good job of managing this year within this division? Well, here's the deal. The division is not that strong this year. There have been clubs that have had, you know, you're figuring the Cubs are going to come in and have another big year like they did. They didn't. It's just a matter of players play, and you have injuries, you have setbacks, you have good years, you have bad years, you have all kind of different things to tie into a course of a season. Here in Pittsburgh, they've had a third baseman, Kung, who can't get out of the country because of three DUIs. You had Starling Marte, their star outfielder, suspended for 80 games because of PEDs. So, you know, a lot of Cardinals have had all kind of injuries. The Cubs just aren't playing like they would. Their pitching staff is aging. So things catch up with you. You guys in Toronto can speak to that issue. And, you know, things just change from year to year in baseball.
Zach, the waiver trade deadline is coming up on the 31st. And as a former general manager, how hard is it to try to get something done when a player you trade has to clear waivers first?
Well, that really depends on the particular player. I mean, you think what just happened with Jay Bruce, you know, going through sometimes there are clubs that would just want to get rid of a contract and hope someone assumes it, because you can claim a player and the club can pull the player back. It's more difficult, no question, but there's still an opportunity to claim a player. So most clubs will run most of their players through waivers. Just for the sake of it's a process that you get a guy through waivers, you can trade him anywhere you want to. If someone claims him or if he's claimed by five clubs, the club with the worst record has the opportunity. He gets the claim, and then you can negotiate with him or let him go. So Pittsburgh, in fact, just picked up two players after the trade deadline, one being Sean Rodriguez that they claimed on waivers from Atlanta, who was a former player here, and the other being a pitcher, George Contos, who they got from the Giants, Giants let him go. So there is still that possibility of helping your club or making a deal after the 31st trade deadline.
Hypothetically, do you think Marco Estrada would ever go through waivers?
I think he would. Well, would he go through waivers? I'm not sure about that. The fact they probably will put him on waivers. I'm not 100% sure what his contract status is, but that has a lot to do with how clubs make decisions on players. You know, last year he was very effective for you, so that was a really nice addition. And oftentimes, if a guy clears waivers, you're going to be able to trade him, as I said. His particular scenario, I'm not sure. I would think that someone would claim him.
Jack, he's a free agent at the end of the year, making 14 this year, so he's got about, what, four left?
Yeah, so, you know, for some clubs that are in dire need of a pitcher, yeah, I mean, and you can claim him, and Toronto could just say he's yours and get rid of the contract, or the fact that they could negotiate a deal and maybe some of the money, if a club can't afford him completely, Toronto might work out some deal where they take back some of the money. So, yeah, I mean, to me, he's an experienced guy, and there are clubs right now that are going to need experienced pitching.
The Jays, Jack, are five games out of the wild card spot. We had a conversation that I felt went on far too long yesterday about this on the program when they were four games out, and then they lose to the Yankees in loud fashion last night, the Yankees outslugging them quite badly. But there are seven teams in between the Blue Jays and the second wild card spot. If you're the general manager of a team in that position at this juncture of the season, what are you telling yourself about your chances?
You have to be realistic and realize that they're very slim. And more than anything else is what you just stated. When you have seven clubs ahead of you, then you're asking. And in addition to that, you've got seven clubs ahead of you. So the biggest issue is you're going to need those clubs to falter. And it is just like almost unrealistic to say that seven clubs are going to play that kind of baseball to knock themselves out of contention for wild card. So the realistic part of this is you're probably looking for years to come.
With Jack Zarenchik, the former GM of the Seattle Mariners, now working in Pittsburgh on TV covering the Pirates, this is Overdrive, TSN 1050.
Jack, we were talking about Aaron Judge before. He's having a tough second half, but he's having an unbelievable year. As a guy who was a general manager, 150 strikeouts he's coming up on. Is that acceptable? Or has the game just changed that much?
You always have to consider this player's age. And you know, when you look at young kids, and you know, I've been looking at that all year long here in Pittsburgh. They've run so many young players through. Josh Bell, a young kid, hit his 20th home run today. And with power, you live with strikeouts. It's just sometimes that's just the way it is. Aaron Judge is a young player who's really hit the ground running, and you're going to expect those numbers to drop as the years progress. But right now, he is what he is. The league's adjusting to him. He's going to have to readjust back to the league. It's that give and take. The league, you punch the league punches back, and it's just a matter of experience and maturity until he's able to lower that strikeout numbers.
What do you think, Jack, if because there's so much talk now and so much focus on offensively launch angle in particular, exit velocity, I think to a bit of a lesser extent, and that was in response to the defensive shifting, right? Ground balls are death. If you're going to beat the ball into the turf to your pull side, chances are you're going to make an out. That's just the way it is now. What do you think the next adjustment or the next response is now to this offensive approach about launch angle, about line drives, balls in the air?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we had Justin Smoke in Seattle for all those years, and it was Justin Smoke who hit the home run on that particular day when it was the most home runs ever hit in Major League Baseball by that point in time in the season. So that's interesting. But, you know, players take advantage of things. There's been so much talk about, are the baseballs a little bit different? I'm not sure about that. There's talk about how good is the depth of pitching. We see big-time power arms. But also, every club in baseball is looking for starting pitching. And you can't win unless you got a really good bullpen. And there are clubs that do not have really good bullpen. So there's so many things tied into it. What's the next wave? I'm not sure. I really don't know what that'll be. I think the one thing we all strive for and we don't see quite as much of is you'd love to see that super athlete get back into baseball. You look at the Billy Hamiltons, you look at the Lorenzo Cain's, and, you know, think about years ago when you could put that whole Cardinal outfit out there, right, talking Toronto on, you know, Devon White in center field and the type of athletes you've had. And I know we've talked about that at so many different meetings. Could this game get more athletic? You know, is there a big push to get athletes to play the game? That would be an interesting thing to gauge and see what happens going down the road somewhere. But, you know, if the launch angle has worked for so many offensive players, then eventually something's going to happen where pitchers figure out how to do it differently. I'm not sure what that will be right now.
Last one for you, Jack. Just on Smoke, he was, correct me if I'm wrong, the corner piece, really the centerpiece of your return in the deal that sent Cliff Lee to Texas. This is, I suppose, what you were hoping and expecting he would turn out to be just a little bit sooner?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's really strange because, like, a couple of years, last year you had Brad Miller who had 30 home runs in Toronto. I mean, in Tampa, he was traded. And you had, like, Logan Morrison having another big year he was traded. And you have Smoke having this kind of year. But he was clearly the centerpiece of the deal. We also got another former first-round pick, Blake Bevin, back in return. And we thought, wow, I mean, at that point in time, you're getting two first-round picks of recent years, both young, both with their careers ahead of them. And, you know, Smoke, it took him a while to get to where he is today, and Blake Bevin had a, you know, nice career, but nothing exceptional. So you never know. Prospects are prospects, and I'm tickled pink for Justin for what he's doing there and what he's meant to the Year Ball Club. And it was a nice addition, I thought, a year ago when they extended his contract. So good for him and good for the Toronto Blue Jays for having the insight to do that.
Appreciate your time, Jack. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jack.
Jack Zarenchik, the former general manager of the Mariners, now doing TV work in Pittsburgh. He joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. Jim Popp, Argos general manager. Jeremy Fowler, senior NFL writer for ESPN, covering the Pittsburgh Steelers, the GM, weighing in,
yes,
on the Le'Veon Bell situation. Dun, dun, dun. We'll get into that Hour number three of Overdrive is next. TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. We got guest overload coming up in the third hour, Gord. There's been so much of you and me, this is now the payback.
The people begging for it.
The intelligent.
Need more of Gord and Scott. You know, we didn't meet until earlier this year. We'd not met until...
And you said you just met Hayes the day you co-hosted with him.
I think I'd met him. I think I'd
was that, down at, that was down at BMO.
Yeah, right? I think I'd seen him once before, but yeah, I'd not met him.
There you
it's
go.
Embarrassing, huh?
Yeah, but you're never in.
Though, I know, I'm never here.
It's like when I did the Jays... For 3 or 4 years, I was never in the office. Yeah. It was crazy. It's like I worked here, but in a way I didn't.
I met a guy at the airport one day. He said, how do you like the new TSN building? I said, oh, it's nice. It's really good. He said, has he been on a tour? He goes, no, I worked there. I said, how long have you been TSN? Longer than you. Oh, sorry about that.
There you go. All right. Hour number three of Overdrive, and we'll kick it off with Bob Weeks, we believe.
At Quail Hollow.
From Quail Hollow. Jeremy Fowler, senior NFL writer for ESPN, covering the Steelers.
It must be hot at Quail Hollow. North Carolina in August?
Man. Oof. Yeah.
They say close down there. It's real close today.
No.
Was that, humid?
Okay.
It's real close day today.
All right. Does that mean like stay closed up, stay inside type deal?
It means like the air is right in you.
Yeah, right in you. And Jim Popp, Argos general manager, will be along. Stay with us. Hour number three of Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller. It starts right now. TSN 1050, the TSN Go app.